Monday, June 23rd, Dodgers take 2 of 3 from the Washington Nationals, take 3 of 4 from the San Diego Padres, and are about to get exposed by the dangerous Colorado Rockies. We're back. It's Deferred Collusion. It's me, Jesse Rowe, King of Crespi, joined as always by Brandon Bollinger, Lord Paramount, Torrance, California. What's up, buddy? How are you?
You know how it is, Jess. I'm very well. It was a fun, very busy weekend. Got to see D-May to Beast Peach on pitch on Saturday. Sorry for that. Not the result we were looking for, but it was still a great day at the ballpark. Yeah, dude, I've just been really frothing over this brand of baseball the last couple weeks. We got new rivals. We got old foes buttressing their lineup with trades.
Oh, I love that.
You know, our last conversation, Jess. Dude, there's so much good ball being played. We were talking about the Rays before we got started. The Red Sox, you know, get rid of maybe a clubhouse cancer. I don't know. But they're looking pretty good. But
well,
nobody is looking as good as our boys in blue, Jess. Those Dodgers.
No, they're not.
Took 7 out of 10 from their immediate division rivals. And some would say the biggest rivalry in baseball right now from the, you know, boys down south, the little brother Padres. Jess, It is good to be back. Deferred collusion. Your blue collar boys talking ball. Please. Oh, if you don't already know, give us a little like, a little subscribe. Tell your friends about us.
Yeah, dude. You know, the Dodgers were playing almost as good. Sorry, you cut out for a second. I'm sorry about that. Dodgers are playing almost as good as those Oklahoma City Thunder, who I feel like we have to, just before we get started, just give them a little bit of love. Congratulations on their first championship in franchise history. Unfortunate for Tyrese Halliburton. That was kind of a bummer, the way that happened.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like losing your best player and then winning. It's always kind of feels a little bit like it was like a tainted game, even though still a very good series. But while you were watching Dustin May on the mound, I was watching 28 years later. So unfortunately, I did not see Dustin May's performance, but I did read the stat line. So I'm sure he's just basically good for 6 innings, 3 runs, like every time now, right? That's basically like guaranteed Dustin May stat line is like keep that 4.5 ERA, 6 innings, 3 runs. That's his. That's not only his ceiling, it's also his floor at the same time.
Hey, consistency be thy name, brother. Yeah. Dustin May was out there throwing with a ton of heart. I told you he was, you know, no pun intended, looking like a man on fire out there. Did give up back-to-back jacks. I text you if you'll look at your messages. Dustin May just gave up back-to-back piss missiles. That was not tasty. In the same exact spot in the right center field. But, dude, he is looking better. He did shut down an offense, but ours got shut down too. Until Sunday. Whoa, dude. Because our boy, Max Cansey, he just so happened to launch his 200th Dodger home run of his career, joining Elite Company. And not to be outdone, he gave the fans a little encore song in the seventh inning, when he launched a 3-run shot into the right center field. So covering both parts of the outfield, dude, left center, right center, he's seeing the ball. Max Cansey, heck yeah, dude.
Yeah, he had seven RBIs in the game. Obviously, his numbers, we've talked about it ad nauseum, his numbers since wearing the glasses have been great. But I think he's also just secured himself probably a spot on this team the rest of the season. I think it's probably the more important note here. I think that it's pretty obvious, because that was obviously a big point of conversation before the season started. Yeah. We talked a little bit about it, but it was that, are the Dodgers going to trade from Nolan Arenado? Are they going to move on from Max Muncy at third base? It seems to me like this is pretty much a guarantee that we're going to see Muncy at third base for the rest of the season. Because I just don't think there's a better option for the Dodgers out there. And the fact that he's producing at such a high level, like the, you know, fifth, sixth spot in the lineup, is it's kind of it's kind of a dream at this point. And you're going to take the occasional throwing error. You're going to take the occasional defensive blunder, because he's going to make up for it with offense. So long as he's continuing to do that, the Dodgers are in great shape with him at third base.
Definitely. It was, it feels like a far cry ago now, Jess, that it just felt like our Max Muncy ship at third was just taken on water. He was a sinking ship, couldn't hit the ball, playing subpar defense. And, you know, it's funny, at the same time, the big dog himself, we'll talk about him a little bit later, but he was struggling as well. And we were talking, man, these are two guys that if you're getting the stick, you can take a little bit of a lackluster performance on defense, you know, average, yeah, we'll call it. But you know what, dude? To both of their credits, mostly Pies, but hey, Muncy's playing a very serviceable third right now. That bat, dude, don't lie. The kid is just mashing taters, and when Muncy is just hitting ding-dongs, I mean, there's not too many better pimp jobs in the game than one Maximilian.
He's one of the better. He's definitely got one of the better pinch jobs, no doubt about it. And you know,
he's a dong flopper, certified dong flopper, dude. He just 100% out there.
And you brought this up before we recorded. I thought it was an interesting question. You know, he's now has 200 home runs as a member of the Dodgers. And, you know, he's been the Dodgers' third baseman for a few years now. He's obviously won two World Series with the team. Where does Max Muncy sort of stand for you in terms of, like, Dodger history at this point and what he's sort of become for the team, how he kind of came out of nowhere? He was a diamond in the rough that Friedman identified, and now here he is, you know, some odd year, almost, what, like 7-8 years later, and he's become a huge part of this team. What do you do? Do you see Max Muncy as, like, a kind of like a under-the-radar Dodgers legend of sorts? Like, is he a name that we're going to remember, like, 30, 40 years from now when they talk about this Dodgers team?
About this Dodgers team, maybe not. You know, still a lot of baseball, a lot of October still lies ahead.
Just in terms of, like, this era of the Dodgers, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's what I would say is, yeah, the caveat to your statement, right, our question. I think that Muncy is a key pillar of this Dodgers era of baseball, and I think he represents a little bit of that mean streak that the Dodgers so sorely needed. There was a lot of talk about guys being too nice, too soft. You know, with the departure of Chris Taylor, we've kind of lost a lot of one of our, like, key psychos, right? Like, I compared him to Jason Bateman, but, you know, dead behind the eyes. Yeah, but Muncy is that bulldog, firecracker kind of guy, get it out of the ocean. That's burned in Dodger memory forever. That walk-off in the 2018 World Series off of Eovaldi is just one of those Dodger moments that will live forever. I can remember his just hitting a nuke in that win-or-go-home game against the Braves in the 2020 playoffs, where the Dodgers, I think, scored like 13 or something in that first inning. Just put it on ice. I remember Muncy just smacking the ball around. So, Jesse, to answer your question, in my humble opinion, I think Max Muncy is a certified Dodger legend. And I think he has rightfully earned his name his name's placement among those Dodger greats. And what really sealed it for me and made that an easy thing to say is that, like, I love James Loney. I love Rafael Furcal. Like, these are a couple of my favorite Dodgers of all time. You know, I love Piazza. These guys didn't do shit compared to what Muncy has done for the Dodgers.
Yeah.
And it's a rare thing to see a guy get 200 home runs with a single franchise, team, especially a team he wasn't drafted by after being picked up off the scrap pile with the A's. So,
yeah.
All the credit in the world to Muncy for kind of refining his love of the game. I know he, after being let go by the A's, kind of went back home, and I think he went to his high school field and just kind of started hitting balls with his dad and refigured out his approach and rediscovered his love for the game. And as they say, Jess, the rest is history, and the two-time champ does what he wants.
Yep, and you know, I don't hate the idea of him being a Dodger legend, because I think that it's the same way guys like you know, like the David Ecksteins of the world, the Darren Erstads of the world, like they might not be the best player on the championship team, but they were one of the most like key components, guys that sort of represent the identity of a team a little bit. And what I mean by that is like Muncy's really known for having these long, good quality at bats, really making the pitcher work, and very workmanlike. Like Max Muncy is the definition of like earning your place on the field. Like he's earned everything he's been given. Not the most talented guy, but really like worked hard, had to learn how to play third base to just keep a spot on the team. Really works hard every at bat, not always successful. Doesn't have the best bat to ball skills. Doesn't have all the best like barrel number. Just doesn't have, he's not the top of anything, but he's really good. Well, at drawing walks, he's really, really great at that.
Eye. I would say an
elite eye for sure. Well, that's what he, and he, that's from hard work. That's obviously a skill, but it's also from hard work. And it reminds me a little, like he's a legend the same way kind of like Kevin Youkilis is from the Boston Red Sox championship teams. A guy that was known, like in Moneyball, they obviously talked about Youkilis, about that he was one of the guys that Billy Beane identified as a guy that wasn't like a traditional power hitter, but he has power and he gets on base a lot. And that's what the team needed. If, you know, if you're not going to pay money for a superstar, you should be paying money for guys that just consistently get on base and have good at bats and can be flexible about where they play on the field. And that's why they identified Max Muncy. And he's a perfect indicator and just emblematic of this new era of Dodgers baseball. And I absolutely think he's a Dodgers legend. And I think that he's going to go down as one of my favorite Dodgers. You know, he'll never be my favorite Dodger, but that's not the point. He deserves to be remembered, and you know, I just hope that he can come through in the playoffs, because I think a lot of Dodger fans have a bad taste in their mouth about what happened in the 2024 playoffs. Even though we won the World Series, he was like 0-for-19, and it carried over into the start of the season. So there've been a lot of Dodger fans who have kind of already said their goodbyes to Muncy at that point, and now here he is, really redeeming himself, and I'm very happy about it.
Which I do think at the time was a little unfair of Dodger fans, because he had such an insane NLCS. It just kind of got overshadowed by Tommy Edman. Just to speak to your point a little bit, before that home run on Sunday, Muncy actually hadn't hit a home run since June 3rd. And you would think a guy like Muncy, who is like a three true outcome guy, boom or bust, you know, would probably just have taken a bunch of walks. But actually, dude, in the 16 games between home runs, and 60 plate appearances, he hit .273, .450, .341 slash, and raised his OPS by 4 points without the ball leaving the ballpark. So not only has he, you know, found his power stroke, but he's changed his approach a little bit, and he's making productive, you know, ABs, which is chef's kiss. Love an evolving player. Keeping it going. So fired up, dude.
I agree.
So fired up.
Good to see. Shohei was also on the mound for Sunday. He pitched last week, obviously, against the Padres, to begin the week against the Padres, and then he ended the week against the Padres. Both outings were one inning. But man, this was obviously very nice to see, because he looked awesome to me, Brandon. Like, I know that he's only throwing one inning, so he might be airing it out a little bit, knowing that he doesn't have to come out and you know extend himself throughout the game. But he can just sort of let it go. He's hitting high 90s, 100 miles an hour, and he finally got his first two strikeouts yesterday against the Nationals, and boy, he looks nasty. But not only that. In a game that he started, he also has a bases-clearing triple and hits a two-run home run as the starting pitcher.
That makes it's a young fan cry. It's just...
He made a child cry. Yeah. Just a great performance by Shohei.
Jesse, if you'll allow me just one quick caveat, just to put a final note on our boy Max Muncy. You know, now at 201 home runs as a Dodger, just want to say that he's coming for Matt Kemp next with 203 Dodger home runs, and Steve Garvey with 211. So Muncy, gonna pass two all-time great Dodgers.
If Steve Garvey is a Dodgers if Steve Garvey's a Dodgers legend, then Max Muncy has to be as well.
And that's no the question, final word, because yeah. J. Rowe said so. But Jess, back to our king, our favorite new father, Shohei Ohtani, dude, doing it all. Five ribbies on Sunday, two Ks. It's funny. I find myself, I don't know if other Dodger fans are feeling this way, but I find myself like getting like really excited, almost giddy, if you will, about seeing Shohei on the mound, because I kind of just completely forgot about that facet of his game. I haven't seen him pitch in a big league game in so long. He's touching 100 miles an hour. I didn't think that was going to happen. I was going to be fired up if he was peppering 96 out there.
Yeah.
He's just a freak, dude. And it's been really cool to see his bat wake up a little bit. He's been slumping as well. The MV3 really have been slumping. And guys like Muncy and Will Smith and Ha-Seong Kim have really been carrying the offense down at the bottom of the lineup. I think Tommy Edman went 0-for on Sunday, but, you know, still a spark plug in the bottom half of that lineup. Teo's still doing his thing. But, yeah, man, just really want to give some of the other guys in the lineup a little love real quick. It's been hyper impressive. And not to be outdone, you know, Jess, I want to talk about that big dog, dude.
We will. I just want to ask one quick question about Shohei and his pitching plan, because both times the Dodgers elected to go with him for just one inning as the opener. And obviously we know Shohei was a full seven inning starting pitcher before he got injured when he was pitching for the Angels. And I'm just curious what you think do you see that this is going to be something that the Dodgers just continue to go forward with throughout the season? Do you think he's going to get built up, or do we just see him being like a short outing guy the remainder of the year? And do you think it's worth having him pitch if he's only going to pitch one inning? Because that has been a point of some contention from people. It's like you have this unicorn, but you're having him pitch only one inning. Like, it's almost like, is this just a sideshow thing? Are you just doing this as like a spectacle, or is there actually like a method to your madness here? Basically just having an extra reliever coming out to open games. Curious what your thought on that is.
Jess, I think that if you are dealing with a unicorn, by its very definition, it means that there are no replacements, right? So you got to be delicate with the one that you have. This particular unicorn is coming back from not just one, but two surgeries, one on the shoulder post-2024 postseason. And of course, we're not calling it Tommy John, but it was definitely something like a Tommy John 2.0.
It was a winter soldier surgery. I'm convinced that they put some sort of vibranium in his elbow or something.
Yeah. Maybe antiantium. I don't know.
Yeah. No, they did something different with Shohei for sure. Yeah, cause he looks like better than before.
Yeah. He's just looking like very Grecian in his physique, very godly. But Jess, my point being, I worked in commercial cultivation for a while. And if you are testing out, let's say a plant is sick and you want to figure it out, or maybe it's, you know, you go through a little checklist of things and you eliminate, right? So it's like, hey, if right. I don't see mites, then I'm going to check maybe the feed is off, or maybe the air isn't circulating. You go through all these different things and you eliminate them, right? So maybe right now we're seeing how his velocity feels, and maybe next week we'll start seeing how his arm feels after some more breaking stuff. I don't know exactly what the Dodgers' grand scheme is, but I can see him being gradually stretched out as we work our way into the fall to be ready for a potential maybe start in the postseason. But if not, I mean, if you can get three innings of a dominant Shohei Ohtani by September, I mean, you couple that with a Ben Kasperius and a Jack Dreyer, and you got a hell of a bullpen game, and you've only used three arms. So,
yeah.
Just saying, and that's leaving out our closers or whatever, but you get my drift.
Yeah, and that's fine. I think
it's a little bit of less is more approach, because there is a lot of wear on the tire.
And that's fine. I think that if this is just a plan for this season, being that he's coming back from injury, and they're trying to, you know, slowly build him out, they're very, obviously very concerned about injury, because if he blows his arm out again, that doesn't just mean that you don't have him for pitching. That means you don't have him for hitting. And that's that is a situation that the Dodgers cannot afford to have. So I obviously understand that logic. I guess my thing would be like, is if this continues into next season where they just continue to do it, where it's just short outings, it's like just have him hit at this point. Like, it's just you're risking injury for one innings every five days, you know. That's the, you know what I mean, like it kind of just feels unnecessary.
I feel like that's fair, but I mean, it's like, also I think I can we'll cross that bridge when we get there type deal, if it goes on that long.
But I'm of the belief that they are just there's two different things happening here. One is that I don't know why I was going with A and one, whatever. There's two things happening here. One is that Shohei doesn't have a traditional rehab, as you've mentioned, that it's going to be different for a guy that has to hit every day, because you obviously can't send him down to AAA and give him give him rehab starts, because you need him in the lineup every day. So he's sort of doing it on the fly as we go. But also, you could have been doing that with just simulated games. You know, you could build it. You could build him up with little simulated games, get him up to four innings that way. Whatever. This is the way that the Dodgers are doing it, so that's fine. But two, it is kind of, this is a guy that's doing something that nobody has ever done before. So we're going to see him do things in the rehab process that nobody's ever done before either. So this is just something that we as fans are going to have to tolerate until he is ready to, you know, to become a five inning starting pitcher again. And until then, this is what we get. And I think that we have to take it. We have to tolerate it. And again, it's like, it doesn't take up a roster spot. It doesn't hurt us at all. It only helps us. It's we're getting an opener every 5 days for an inning without affecting a roster spot. And I think that's pretty key, and the way to look at it, that's actually a good thing.
Oh yeah, I think ultimately what it comes down to is, what do you personally see as a healthy return for Shohei? The Dodgers may be looking at it as, hey, we won't ever need Shohei to be a seven-inning guy again. Like, those days are gone. Like, this much wear, this many, you know, surgeries on your arm, but we can see you as a dominant five inning pitcher, you know, for the next however many years, you know, in, you know, perpetuity, right? So I could see maybe there's a bit of that, because, like you said, there, no one's ever done this before. This is a first time go for all of us as we get to view. So I think that, you know, it kind of just comes down to the onus is on us as the consumer of sports. I think we can all have one idea of what a healthy return for Shohei qualifies as, but maybe the Dodgers have a different plan. So kind of feels like they're not too worried about rushing it. Right.
Yeah. And I think
I do not admit, whether it's one inning or not, like, getting to see Shohei go against Tatis and Machado and, you know, just this pretty potent, you know, for just to use the Padres as an example, but star studded lineup, like, it gets me fired up, dude. It's better than most UFC cards these days. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yep, no, you're right. You're right. And those UFC cards will not be headlined by John Jones anymore, by the way.
Dude, can you believe it?
But
yes,
you know,
I do want to ask you real quick before I just on John Jones. Do you think that this is all just staged, or he knew this, like, you know what I mean? Dude, he knew all this trouble was coming, right? So, like,
yeah, but I also think he 100% is ducking Tom Aspinall.
Last few weeks online, like,
oh, you're cutting out.
Uh-oh. What were you saying, Daddy?
You were cutting out a little bit there. Yeah, I mean, I do think he's ducking Tom Aspinall 100%, but I also, yeah, this legal stuff, I guess, is it's nothing new for John Jones. You know, and to cap off the Shohei conversation, we are, you know, privileged. There's only been a handful of two-way players in the history of the sport, and the Dodgers have two of them on their team, so they already have to settle one, and now we have another who's probably not going to be a two-way player anymore. It seems like Dodger fans have agreed that it's time for Kike Hernandez to retire as a starting as a relief pitcher coming out of the bullpen, and that the gimmick is up, Brandon, because he only got one out and he gave up like what, four or five runs yesterday, or four runs.
Yeah, and then Vesia had to come in and clean up his mess, and it's like, yeah. All right, well, like, if this is what's going to happen, you know, just have Vesia come in and close it. Let's not be here any longer than we need to be, which was what the announced team was talking about during the game. But look, I'm all for it. I think it actually like has won us a game in that blowout game. I think it was against the Padres a couple weeks back. They had Kike come in the sixth. I think Fuzzy was calling it like an embarrassment to the game. Some other whatever baseball talking heads had a problem with it, but I was kind of fine with it. That felt like a little bit of gamesmanship, whatever. But, you know, he's got the helmet on, which is just kind of for laughs. Like, Kike is that kind of goofy guy. But when you're serving up fucking walks and hard hit balls and homers, it's not funny. It's just annoying. And it does seem like Dodger fans have had their fill. You know, you were saying, like, hey, how long till I get fed up of Shohei just pitching one inning? And it's like, it'll be a lot less than I'm fed up with watching Kike pitch one inning. I don't know. Give Miguel Rojas a shot. Fuck it, dude.
And I'm one of the guys that defends the Dodgers doing this, because obviously the Dodgers have tons of pitching injuries, and they have these, they have these blowouts where they're like, well, we don't have any of our spare relievers available, of our lower end relievers available. We only have a couple of our, you know, higher end relievers available that we want to save for tomorrow. The Dodgers have made it clear that they have these pitching plans that they are going to follow no matter what. It's like there, some of these games, it's like, no matter what, we got Robleski going, we got Jack Dreyer going. And who was the guy that hit Tatis the other night? We're going to talk about him in a second. Like, we have these guys.
Oh, it was his debut, the rookie kid.
Yeah, either way, they are set. Like, no matter what, we are not going to deviate from these four pitchers today, because tomorrow we're going to have a full slate. We're going to have Kopech. We're going to have Vesia. We're going to have Bandit. Like, everybody's going to be available for tomorrow. And the Dodgers have kind of learned from their mistakes of the past, and they said that that's what we are going to do. And we started seeing that in the playoffs last year, especially in the NLCS and then in the World Series, where, you know, the value of having a Brent Honeywell go in and just kind of wear it and just pitch the final four innings, win or lose, no matter what, he's going to eat those innings, and we're not going to deviate from the plan. So I think that that's where they sort of found this little role for Kike to fill. I just think that they're going to have to figure something else out, because it's just you're risking a loss when you have a guaranteed win. And that's just, I think that fans can only be tolerant of it for so long, even though I do defend the Dodgers doing that, because I would rather them just stay healthy through the rest of the season. The question is, do you think that was the last time we saw Kike pitch this season?
Unfortunately, no, I don't. And I think I'll still enjoy it a couple times.
Yeah.
But as long as we're not seeing any more of this, like, just shit, get some outs. If you can't get the outs, then you shouldn't pitch anymore. But at least take the helmet off. It does feel a little disrespectful now, but you know what doesn't feel disrespectful, Jess?
What?
A certain king getting a little close to a big-time milestone, but I won't even let you guess. King Clayton Kershaw is a mere 8 strikeouts away from 3,000, Jess. I think he'd become, what, is it the third all-time left-handed pitcher to hit that mark. I know it's Randy Johnson and one other. It's slipping my mind right now, dude.
Yeah.
Killing me. Sandy Koufax, I think.
So, anyway, I think you're right.
Jess, what have you been, how have you been feeling about Kersh, dude? He's starting to, dial in a little bit. He's giving up some soft contact, giving up some walks, but nothing major, no real major damage, as of late.
This is exactly what I wanted to see from Clayton Kershaw, like, over the past like 3 or 4 starts that we've gotten from. This is exactly the Kershaw that I wanted to see. A guy, he can give you 5 innings, maybe 6, and he can keep the, you know, he might give up a couple runs, but he's not, you know, consistently going to be giving up like 6.
Gonna keep you in the game.
Yeah, like 5-6 innings, 2-3 runs, just keep you in the game, keep racking up the strikeouts, save the bullpen a little bit, and I think he's doing exactly what we need him to do, especially once we can get Blake Snell and Tyler Glasnow back. I think that Kershaw is going to look so much better to us once we have those guys back in there, because there'll be less reliant on Kershaw, which I think is just only going to help him. And as of right now, so we slated to pitch on Thursday in Colorado, assuming that he doesn't strike out 8. That means that he would likely be pitching against the Chicago White Sox at home to start off July, where he could get 3,000 strikeouts. And I really, really, really hope he does not get 8 in Colorado. I really hope we don't see like some vintage performance. I hope he just gets like 5 or 6, and then he can break it. He can break 3,000 at home against the White Sox. That's my dream. I just want to see it happen in front of Dodger Stadium. That's all that matters to me.
That would be super rad. A little upkeep on Clayton on this season. He's got a 3-0 record. Jess, that ERA has shrunk down to a 3.31. 7 games started and 32 2/3 innings pitched. He's got 24 Ks. The whip is a little nasty at 1.316, a little higher than his career of 1.013. Jess, I'm not saying it's vintage Kersh, but we're getting a crafty, wily vet who is kind of mixing in a slider, really found the feel for that curve, and the slide piece is still as effective as it can be with that diminished fastball. But,
yeah,
hey, man, keeping runs off the board and beating teams that he's supposed to. And like you said, keeping it close. That's really all you can ask for with this hyper-potent Dodger offense that's basically just looking to bludgeon you to death.
So
I believe the Dodgers have 29 come from behind wins on the season right now. Unreal. Just crazy.
So one important note here, if he doesn't break it in his next 2 starts, because right now over 7 starts, he has 24 strikeouts. It means he's averaging 3.5 strikeouts per outing. So if he hits his average, that means he only strikes out 7 in his next 2 games, which means that he would be the next time he would pitch would probably be in Milwaukee.
Ooh.
Which would kind of be a bummer if he broke 3,000 in Milwaukee. Just a little note.
Just Hollywood that he's going to break it in L.A. You know?
I think he's going to do it at home. I think he'll get like 4 or 5 strikeouts against Colorado, and then he'll break it at home. That's what I'm hoping happens here. All right. So let's talk a bit about the Dodgers-Padres series, because we didn't, even the Giants a little bit, we didn't really cover this too much, but we got to see, are you looking forward to Dave Roberts versus Mike Schilt rematch? When are they playing each other again? Do you know? When we go to San Diego?
Got 6 games left against each other. I'm not sure.
So,
let me see. When do the Dodgers?
So I guess I would ask you,
August 15th is the next time they're playing.
Yeah. So obviously there was a little bit of a brawl, or almost a brawl, where the Dodgers hit Fernando Tatis multiple times in the series, and the Padres retaliated both times by hitting Shohei Ohtani. And Nendo was hit 3 times. You have it here in the notes. And then, of course, it led to Dave Roberts and Mike Schilt, you know, getting face to face, and Dave telling Mike that he's going to beat his ass, basically. Did Dave Roberts' stock go up for you in this altercation? Because I came out of this like so proud of Doc, because it's a side that I'd kind of never seen from him before, and I was so proud. But then I learned he actually did this in 2017 with another Padres, the Padres manager at the time. I forget who it was, but he said the same thing to him. Told him he would beat his ass. I was like, Jesus, Doc, I didn't know you had this in you.
You know, Dave's the son of a military family, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm sure he learned to fight early growing up in Japan. But no, I love seeing Doc get fucking scrappy. I like seeing my I really thought him and Mike Schilt were just kind of like going to just talk about it after the game and be buddies until they're like, I'm going to beat your ass. It's like, dude. fuck yeah, we need some of that. Like, that's what I was saying about Muncy and Chris Taylor before that. Like, it's good to have guys that can get chippy and scrappy, especially against the Padres team that for so long, it feels like that was their, the edge they tried to have in every game, was that they were going to try and get under your skin, maybe make you make a bonehead play or rush a throw or, you know, what have you. You know, Machado's a little taunter, Tatis, the former Padre Jurickson Profar, you know, just some of these guys, little, what do they call them? Little pot stirs. You know, they just like to stir the pot a little
bit.
Did
you come out of this, did you come out of this series, like, hating the Padres anymore? Or, like, I don't know how to put this. Like, do you feel like they looked, like, they, it kind of feels like they got, like, daddied a little bit by the Dodgers in this series, and that they were reacting, I thought that they were reacting very poorly to Fernando getting hit, because I don't think that the Dodgers ever intentionally hit Fernando Tatis. I don't think, like, at any point that that happened. And it seems like they were just throwing at Shohei as a reaction, and I know that Eric Kratz was on foul territory basically saying that, like, this is a mandatory reaction from the Padres, that they have to do it. If you can't pitch up and in, basically, and you're going to hit their best player, that they have to do the same thing. But that just sounds like such a fucking weak cop-out of an answer. It just seems very weak-minded to me. And, like, going after Shohei, I'm sorry, but, like, Fernando Tatis, Shohei Ohtani, I'm sorry, but, like, one is way more valuable than the other. And it just seems like the Padres just are, they just kind of looked super cheap to me after that. I don't know what, they just looked like little bitches. You know what I'm saying? Like, just to throw at Shohei just because they got hit a couple of times, because Andy Páez, you know, reacted poorly to being hit and then goes off and absolutely destroys you. It's just, you just look like you got beat up on, and you were trying to hurt somebody, and the Dodgers weren't. And that just seems like you're, I don't know, poor sports. That's my take on the situation.
I mean, if there was any, you know, evidence to just completely, like, point to, it's like after Shohei got hit, he, like, walked over to the dugout and, like, calmed him down.
Shohei's reaction, dude, Shohei's reaction was, like, the most demoralizing, emasculating thing I've ever seen a pro athlete do. Like, the way that he reacted, just told the dot, he gets hit clearly intentionally, points out the team, and he's just like, guys, just stay, don't worry. This isn't even worth our time. Like, it was just like, and then goes over and starts talking to the Padres, like, joking with them as if it didn't affect him at all. I loved that from Shohei. I thought that was one of the most just big daddy moments a professional athlete could ever have. He just owned them in that moment. And they were, like, standing there talking to him, like, oh shit, this guy doesn't give a fuck what we just did. Like,
yeah, he just took, they knew
that there was nothing else they could do. Yeah.
He just ate a 100-mile-an-hour heater off the back and is telling his guys to back up, walks up to our dugout by himself and basically tells them they settle down.
One on 26. Just one on 26. Like, come on, guys. Calm down. Relax. Loved it. That was so good.
Shit on Shohei, dude.
Yeah.
But it did get me thinking, not that I hate the Padres, but more so that I'm like, this is officially the hottest rivalry in baseball today. There isn't a more, you know, pressing rivalry. I loved beating the Giants. That was amazing, and it felt like a good litmus test. They're a really good team, but beating the Padres had a little extra oomph when, you know, you see Shohei wear a couple, when you see Páez wear a couple. But Jess, they tell you growing up to let sleeping dogs lie, let alone the big dog, the Cuban Missile Crisis himself, Andy Páez. My God, dude.
He came out. Currently stock,
sitting at 7th
his stock,
in the All-Star Game ballot voting. So please get to voting for our boy. He deserves to be on that ballot over Soto. Come
right
on,
now, Brandon. Right now, Teoscar is the starting left fielder for the All-Star team, and, like, it's, I love Teo, one of my favorite Dodgers ever at this point. But, like, Andy Páez deserves to be there more than Teoscar Hernandez. I think we could agree. Did nobody's stock rose more out of that Padres series than Andy Páez. I think you'd agree with me there.
Yeah, definitely a bit of a show stealer.
Yeah.
There's something I just love about a quiet, just killer. You know, I've mentioned Chris Taylor a couple times now, but the way Páez has a swing of the bat with just such intent, such purpose. He just looks like he's seeing the ball so well. He's made such a leap in center field. That arm is so deadly. He's really developing into a well-rounded ball player, like before our very eyes. In real time, we're seeing the growth. And man, it feels like all the guy needed was just a little extra animosity to kick it into extra gear. Hey, it's not unprecedented, right? We've seen Kike for years now find that extra gear in the postseason or seemingly games that mattered most. Teo's a guy like that, right? Starting to appear that maybe Andy Páez is one of those guys too. I mean, Jess, you throw that in with Tommy Ebbin, Ha-Seong Kim, Will Smith. I mean, dude, we got a lineup that just, it's just all guys that can, you know, at any given moment be the guy in your
Yeah, life. And even Dalton Rushing has had some really, really, really good at bats in the days that he's filling in for Will Smith. I think he had a perfect day at the plate yesterday, if I'm not mistaken. I know that he got on base like a few times. Just really good, solid at bats, and it's starting to bleed over all of the quality at bats. They're starting to bleed over in the bottom of the lineup, and Pop is a huge part of that. And just shout out to the Dodgers social media team who did coin him being Big Dog Andy Páez, because that came from a quote from Manny Machado, who I'm still not sure if this quote is real or not. There, I haven't been able to find video of it, but apparently he said that they weren't throwing it. The Padres were not throwing at Andy Páez because they have, you know, the Dodgers have other big dogs
over there. Other
big dogs on the team, like Shohei and Mookie and Freddie, which does make sense. That is technically true, but Dodgers social media team did not.
And then they did hit Shohei.
Yeah, right. But it just then literally the day after that quote happens, Páez hits two homers or whatever it was, and it has, you know, just an amazing series. So he really, his stock really, really, really rose, especially for Dodger fans too.
I think he's got 6 defensive runs saved on the season.
Yeah, and he's also throwing runners out.
It's just crazy. Dude deserves to be on the All-Star team. Like I mentioned earlier, he's just a few votes out of that 6th seed to make it to the next round of balloting.
Yeah.
Just a little segue of some other guys that are leading the ballots. Like you'd mentioned, Teoscar, Freddie Freeman over at first, Shohei, of course, at DH. And I don't think anybody outside of LA is surprised, but Will Smith leading all catchers as the starting All-Star game catcher. Jess, he had a couple of my favorite at-bats of the season. Was it against the Giants that he had that 12-pitch at-bat that ended in a home run, and then that pinch-hit walk-off the other night?
I mean,
just talking about guys who just are clutch. Will Smith has been leading the MLB in, I think it was like sack flies since he's gotten into the league or something like that. Just a guy, just like I was saying, just another productive guy who can be the guy at any moment. And I don't know. What a fucking luxury it is to have Will Smith behind the dish. And then, like you were just talking about, another young talent in Dalton Rushing, giving him a break a couple times a week and seemingly starting to find his footing as a, you know, for the first time in his career as a part-time player.
One note on Páez here, by the way, in terms of like why he deserves to be in the All-Star game. Right now, he is tied with Juan Soto in WAR, or he's 0.1 away. Páez is 3.1. Juan Soto is 3.2. So, like Andy Páez, he's 24th in the league in wins above replacement right now. So, and that's it. That's across Major League Baseball right now this season. He's one of the 25 best players in the game in terms of WAR. So, if you don't make the All-Star team doing that, then I don't know what you need to do to make the All-Star team.
I did not have that on my bingo card.
No,
Andy
not at
Páez
all.
Be an All-Star this year. He deserves it. That's my All-Star, dude.
You know who also might make the All-Star team this year?
Who's that?
Ryan Pepiot of the Tampa Bay Rays.
Dude, don't get me started on Pat, dude.
So I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I've been seeing some comments about it, especially in the fantasy baseball space, because Ryan Pepiot had a massive week last week. He had a two-start week, and he just was insane. And obviously the Dodgers used to have Ryan Pepiot on the team before they traded him for Tyler Glasnow, who just had a rehab start the other day. He went two innings, had some trouble finding the strike zone. He had three walks and only threw 22 strikes out of like 50 something pitches. So it was kind of a little bit of a janky outing for him, a little rusty. But the Dodgers should be getting him back in the next few weeks probably. But, when you see Ryan Pepiot's stats right now and how he's been pitching, do you feel like you are at the point where you think that trade for Glasnow was a mistake?
Man, my heart says yes. Yeah. I am a Tyler Glasnow fan.
I am too.
I think he's a tip of the spear type of pitcher, but everybody knew when we made this trade that injury was going to be, the crux of the whole thing. If he's on the field, great. It was almost season ending last year for the team. After he went down, we were really hoping for him to make some sort of miraculous return. But, as the year just kind of kept going on, it just never came back. And, this season has not been any different. So, yeah, we're definitely missing Pepiot, especially after, seeing him take a lion's share of innings and he's got like a 3-2 ERA. And it's like, oh my God, this would be just so nice. But if we can just get a healthy Glass just in some October games, get him a couple October wins, I think Dodger fans will be able to say it was a good trade. But
as of
recording right now, it's a bad trade.
Yeah, it is, because he just has not been on the mound. And I agree. I think that the only way that we're ever going to look at this as a good trade is if, especially with the money, the dollars involved in this. Yeah. Pepiot was on a team controlled deal. I think he had 4 years of control left that the Dodgers were trading away to sign Glasnow to a 5-year extension. And, we're in year two and he's already been on the IL three times. And one of those times he was out for the rest of the season, including the playoffs. So he needs to pitch in October. Cause I've maintained that when he's healthy and on the mound, he's one of the best pitchers in baseball. And if he can have a good second half and be a playoff contributor, I think that just by default of being on the mound, he will do enough to win back fans and be a, help the Dodgers win a World Series, because he's that kind of a pitcher. We just haven't seen him be able to do it yet. And it sucks, because I really like the guy and I really, really, really want to root for him. I think he fits really well with the team. The guy's kind of just been doomed by injuries, and it's to see Pepiot doing what he's doing and Glasnow be where he's at, knowing how many injuries the Dodgers have in pitching, and Pepiot's healthy and he's thriving. It's just that kind of sucks. So I'm hoping that we get Tyler Glasnow, for a full season one of these days, but at the very least just pitching in October. And I think that's all that's going to matter. But yeah, right now it kind of stings.
But one more for you, Jess, too. I guess it's not a trade per se, but kind of wish we still had Gavin Lux. I feel like he could be probably doing decent in left field, and he's batting a lot better than Michael Conforto.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with you there, because I think Haesung Kim has kind of replaced him. And, we obviously have Tommy Edman. Conforto, he hasn't been good, but that's by choice of the Dodgers to continue playing Michael Conforto. I think Haesung Kim should just kind of replace him in the lineup at this point. Conforto just comes off the bench against righties, be a platoon guy or something.
I do have a theory about Conforto, though, and that the Dodgers are literally just giving him every opportunity to build his trade value, to get something out of him.
Yeah, probably.
Because literally it couldn't get worse, right? He's the worst qualified batting average in MLB right now, so it can only go up from here, baby.
Poor guy. I saw him on a Dodgers social media post about voting for Dodgers All-Stars, and Conforto was on the list, and everybody in the comments were just fucking roasting him, and I felt a little bad. I'm just like, oh man, if his family sees that fucking sucks. You know?
Well, dude, he's got to change his Instagram profile picture, and it'll help a lot. But
I know he's like still never the Giants.
Like catching up with, let's get a little State of the Union address. What do you
let's
say?
Do it.
The standings around the league. I will. Why not kick it off, Jess? So head out to the NL West since we were talking about the Dodgers. Going out to Colorado to face those Rockies, sitting there at a league worst 18-60. Nothing. They don't deserve to be talked about. The Diamondbacks still fighting around 500 at 39-38. Padres sitting in third place at 42-35. Jesse, they're five games back right now. Mm-hmm. Like we had mentioned, Dodgers really took care of their veggies, if you will.
Yep.
Giants 44-34. They are 3.5 games back. And the Dodgers with the best record in the NL at 48-31. Pirates, home to everyone's favorite starter, Paul Skeens, 31-48, in no threat of being relevant this season. The Reds 40-38. They made a notable addition by subtraction, would you call it, Jess?
Yep, they did.
They cut. Was it Jaime Candelaro that had just signed? Was it a 3-year, like $45 million deal with them in 2023 or 4? Yeah, he is DFA'd today. That was not a good deal. Look, huh?
Not a good deal. But one note on the Reds, though, they are calling up the number one pitching prospect in baseball, who's pitching tomorrow against the Yankees, Chase Burns. This kid is electric. He's been compared to Paul Skeens. He is awesome. I think he's going to just hit the ground running and be really, really, really good. And he is their number one prospect. And they should be getting Hunter Green back pretty like the next month as well. So those are two additions to their pitching staff that I think are going to be very helpful. So I wouldn't be surprised to see the Reds maybe go on a little bit of a run here. I would keep my eye on them.
Hey, if you're a gambling man, maybe put a couple bucks in.
Yeah, buy Cardinals, some stock in the Reds.
Cardinals still in the conversation, 42-36, 4.5 games out. Brewers, 43-35, 3.5 games behind the National League Central leading Chicago Cubs, 46-31. Pete Crow Armstrong on pace for something like 44 homers, 50 stolen bags this year.
Yeah. He also leads the league in all-star votes right now. He's leading in all-star votes.
Wow. PCA, check that out. But, star is born, dude.
But the Brewers had just called up Jacob Mizorowski, who is the most disgusting starting pitcher I've ever seen in my life. He's like just pitching perfect games in every time that he's out there. But they've won 4 in a row. They're 7-3 in their last 10, and they were our NL Central pick. Also, keep your eye on the Brewers to potentially overtake the Cubs for the division, because that's feeling like a possibility right now. I know the Cubs have been really good, but the Brewers have slowly been gaining ground. They're making a slow crawl towards the top. And
man, a lot of season left, dude. We're
they're
not
looking
even
better.
There.
They're looking better.
Heading out to the NL East, dude, and while we're talking about these Cubbies, it sounds like the Marlins are in talks with the Chicago Cubs on a potential Sandy Alcantara trade. That would be fascinating. So something to keep an eye on moving forward. Sandy has been pretty good, I think, over his last like 7 or 8 starts with a sub-3 ERA. So I don't know. Fascinating. Hope something materializes. The Nationals, who just played the Dodgers over the weekend, 32-46. They are 15 games back. Braves, 35-41. Mets, 46-32. They're one game behind the Phillies, 47-31. We're not quite where we're at the point where we're going to start talking about trades, but that top that top in the NL East, dude, is going to be fireworks between the Phillies and the Mets fighting for talent at the trade deadline. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, those teams are both major candidates for trades. The Phillies maybe look towards trading Alec Bohm for another third baseman. Potentially, that could become part of the mix. And the Mets for a starting pitcher. I don't know if Miami would trade in division, would trade Sandy in division or not, but that's a possibility. Let's move over to the American League. In the AL West, Brandon's American League West champion, the Sacramento Athletics, are 32-48, bringing out their.
And they just broke ground in Vegas and didn't actually do it outside because it was too hot outside.
Yeah, well, that's good to build a baseball stadium somewhere where it's too hot to break ground. So they are 14 games back. So you're they're right in there. They're hanging in there, Brandon. The Anaheim Angels are 37-40. They're 7.5 back. The Texas Rangers are trying to hang in there. They're 38-40. They're 7 back. The Seattle Mariners are 39-37. They're 5 back. And the Houston Astros, once again, are just winning the AL West, I guess. They are 45-33. Going over to the Central, we got the Chicago White Sox, 25-53. They're 23.5 back. The Dodgers will see them soon. So, of course, one of them, they're going to have Sandy Koufax on the mound, of course, when they play us. Then there's the Twins, who have actually been playing some terrible baseball. They are 1-9 in their last 10. They were actually making strides on the division, and they just totally fell apart. They're 37-40. They're 11 back. Kansas City Royals are 38-40. They're 10.5 back. Cleveland Guardians are 39-37. They're 8.5 back. And the Detroit Tigers are just running away with this thing. And they are 49-30. And Fox Sports MLB has them as the number one in their power rankings over the Dodgers at number two. Brandon, is it just like prisoner of the moment because they have a better record? Or are they just – are they better
pretty than much. Dodgers? Pretty much. I guess you can give them an edge for a little bit of more consistent run at the top of their division, but it's not quite as formidable as the NL West. One little side note too, just shouts out to the Mariners, Cal Raleigh, dumper, just leading everybody in home runs this year. Pretty fucking incredible, dude.
He's on pace for the most home runs ever by a catcher. He has 20. So I was listening to another podcast where he has 30. I forget how many home runs he has right now before the All-Star break. And the record is 39 before the All-Star break. Barry Bonds. So Cal Raleigh has 20 games to hit 8 more home runs, to have the most ever home runs before the All-Star break in the history of baseball. Just unbelievable. Yep. He's on pace to hit 66 homers or something like that.
This guy has already hit 31 and is on pace to hit 66. That's incredible that he's leading Shohei, Aaron Judge, these world beaters. And it's a guy nicknamed Big Dumper.
Yep. And he's also on my fantasy baseball team. So I'm thriving here, buddy. I'm thriving over here.
Talk about a win. Yeah. Win, dude.
Let's go over to the NL AL East to wrap this out. Baltimore Orioles, I thought they were going to start going on a run, but they're struggling. They're 33-44. They have been playing better, though. They're 12 games back. The Red Sox are 40-39. They are 6 games back. The Toronto Blue Jays are 41-36. They're 4 games back. And those pesky Tampa Bay Rays will not go. What just happened here? I just went out, got all bright. They just won't go away. They're playing great baseball. They're 43-35. They're 2.5 back of the division leading New York Yankees at 45-32. And Brandon, I'm calling it now. I think that the Yankees, they might be in for some trouble, because I see there are a couple of teams playing really good baseball in that division. The Red Sox are playing well, and the Rays are playing really well. And I just see the Yankees are going to, they might start having some trouble because they're having trouble scoring runs. So, I don't know. Do you think that the Yankees hold on?
Well, Jess, we were looking at some of the top defensive runs saved for teams in baseball, and sitting at number 6 was our Dodgers with 32 defensive runs saved, or excuse me, 31 defensive runs saved, and sitting at 5th place were the Yankees, just edging them out at 31. Yeah. Very notably, defense was a main priority for this Yankees ball club in the offseason. And, dude, it just feels like all these pieces that were supposed to make up for the production of Juan Soto just haven't really equated to that, you know? Judge still having a hell of a season, but, I mean, just a few weeks ago we were talking about, is he going to hit 400? And it's like, no, it's clearly not, you know? And maybe some of that is, you know, due to not having Soto in front of him. Maybe, you know, the threat of Goldschmidt and Bellinger and whatever, Jazz isn't, it just isn't the same. I know they did just get Giancarlo back, old Mikey Stanton. So we'll see if that kind of gives this offense a little kick in the tuchus, you know?
I mean,
look what Muncy being able to see did. It's a real spark plug in the middle of that lineup.
Also, I think that Yankee fans are starting to catch on that Anthony Volpe might not be the next Derek Jeter. And I think they're coming to terms with that right now. You know, he's not a bad player. He's a 735 OPS, but, like, he's not elite by any metric in any capacity. And on defense, too, he's not elite, which I think is the biggest problem that they're having right now. It's like, if you're not going to hit the ball, then you better field it. And he's having some trouble with that. So, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I think the Yankees could still hold on, but I would not be surprised if the Rays just keep doing what they're doing, because they're just playing great baseball right now.
You got to keep an eye on that one, Jess, let me tell you.
Brandon, I'm keeping my eye on you, big dog, because you were on fire today. I see good things for you, and this was a fun one, a little bit longer than usual, but we got a lot to talk about. And the Dodgers, baby, they're just so fucking hot right now, Brandon. Yeah, oh, that's a sexy Latino shirt,
hoop, brother. That's what these Dodgers are bringing—a little bit of that Latino heat.
You always bring it, dude. You always bring the Latino heat.
Hey, dude. Yeah. Mi gente, mi corazón. It's my people's, dude.
Why didn't you tell me I had, like, dandruff on my shirt?
I thought that was part of your style. I didn't want to flex on you. But, ladies and gentlemen, this has been another episode of Deferred Collusion, hosted by none other than the King of Crespi, the Lord Paramount of the South Bay, Jesse Rowe, Brandon Bullinger, your blue-collar boys, giving you that dirty look at baseball. Jess, this was a fun one. A little bit longer than we expected, but
just repeating, dude, what I said, dude. Just come up with your own material, dude.
Dude, I'm trying my best, but I'm trying to be more professional like you and your messenger boy hats. Anyways, got anything for the people?
I just look damn good right now, and I just kind of want to end on a high note.
No, you don't, dude. Latino.
Yeah.
Hey, we'll see you next time. Peace.